offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Sai Prakash of Team Radio Sai. We are in the middle of our summary of the last 8 discourses in the 1990 summer course series. We've barely managed to go past, the 13th discourse. So before I begin, I invite Brother Sai Prakash to join me. Sairam Sai Prakash.
Sairam Prem. Yes, we have a difficult task at hand today. We hope to complete summarizing the 3 discourses that are left in the series. And in a sense, I don't know what to say, because that completes the series, which we started about a year and a half back.
Right.
And the things that we have learned and the things that we have discovered are amazing. But before we go on to the next discourse, I think the last portion of the previous discourse,
right,
where Swami says, you may think why I'm not talking to few, why I'm speaking to a few. That's because I value my words. And if you do not have attach importance to my words, I do not want to waste my words. And that was something so powerful. And I think that sentence should reverberate in our hearts whenever we listen to Swami's discourses. And he would say, anything is worth it only if you start practicing it. So,
right.
In a sense, that leads us naturally to the next discourse called Practice and Precept.
Right. In a sense, you know, you've sat through a series of discourses.
Mm-hmm.
You've received so much from Swami.
Correct.
And when you receive, in a sense, even if you have a neighbor who every day comes,
mm-hmm,
and says that, you know, I made this, please accept. I made this dish, please have some.
Mm-hmm.
At some point you will feel that, you know, I'm only... Even I have to return something, you know, return in favor, the favor.
Mm.
I should do something and give back. And in that sense, even in your journey with God, even in your journey with Swami, at some point we will stop and say that I too want to give back something in return.
Correct.
You know, I've received so much, and there should be some kind of give and take. And when you've heard so much from Swami, what is the only thing you can return?
Mm.
I think it's only practice.
That's the only thing he wants, and there's nothing else that Swami actually wants from us. And more or less, you know, when you say Nididhyasanam, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam is putting it into practice.
Right.
And he says, you have heard enough, you have thought of it enough, now get down to practice. Very beautifully, even this discourse, he starts with this eternal truth of the world we live in is impermanent. And how the youth, the wife, the children, they come midstream and join the river of life. And I think part of it is based on the shloka from Bhajagovindam. Kate Kanta Kaste Putra. So there's a shloka.
Mm.
And so it's based on that. But Swami starts this discourse, practice and precept, by giving us the truth. It's like the baseline. And he says, this is all, the world is just temporary. And he gives this beautiful point of all that you have achieved, all that you have lived for is temporary. The only two things that stand for all time is dharma and kirti.
Right.
And he also says the scriptures have declared, yad drishyam tad nashyam. Whatever is visible is perishable. I mean, it's such a difficult thing to keep in mind all the time. So everything that you see is temporary. And everything that you don't see is permanent. Is that right?
Right. In fact, the next point which Swami goes on to make, you know, he says what defines a human life is the ability to go beyond what is just visible to the eye.
Correct.
You know, Swami makes that point of without
charma
developing
chakshu,
the jnana chakshu, the wisdom, the eye of wisdom, if a man is content with charma chakshu,
correct,
he is no better than birds and beasts.
Correct.
In fact, other than birds and beasts, that's what differentiates a man from a machine.
That's right.
What you have, like a camera, you know, you just open the aperture and it just records whatever is in front of it.
Correct.
There is no discrimination in that.
Mm.
And it just is a record of what happens before it. And if man also behaves that way.
If you want a mechanized replica of all the senses, then it's a robo.
Right. Exactly. You know, something which just receives and processes information.
Correct. In fact, in some of this discussions that we had with Professor Venkatraman. Very beautifully he explained to us the evolution of technology and computers, right. And how there is this famous experiment where they say, can the computer ever reach up to the intelligence of human beings?
Right.
Possibly it could, and in many ways the computer has beaten even the grandmasters. It can have a lot of fast calculation, but the conclusion is it cannot feel.
Right.
It has no feelings.
In fact, I think the question which the scientist didn't ask is, can the human mind go down to the level of a machine? I think that is what is happening faster than what is happening the other way around.
Correct.
Because in a sense, that's what we've done. There is no... The feeling part of it is slowly edging out. Mm-hmm. And just plain binary decision making.
Swami would often tell what computer is Dobi using. And,
very true.
He just takes your clothes and gets back exactly your clothes.
Absolutely.
There is no mapping and, categorizing into folders and bins and this
We've seen that in the hostel, especially with the Dobi.
Correct.
There are 300, 400 boys. Mm. One thing is he doesn't lose your clothes.
Mm.
The other thing is the moment he sees you, he'll pick up your pair and he'll give it to you.
Amazing.
And we all wear whites.
Yeah.
Imagine
that's
that.
The point.
It's not just all wearing colors. Really stupendous.
Even then, he is far from having that Jnana Chakshu, because the Jnana Chakshu is only for one who has got the Atma Jnana.
Right.
Well, he has got an alert mind, I would suppose, to give the right dress back to. But here, very beautifully, Swami says that only when you develop Atma Jnana, he says, that is the fulfillment of the sacred human life.
Right. And that's why Swami says, human life is so beautiful that it is worth experiencing and enjoying.
Mm.
But you're not enjoying it to its completeness. You're not finding its fulfillment if you're not going after the acquisition of Atmajnana.
And then he says, he gives this limitation of the senses. He says, your physical eyes are not capable of seeing your entire body.
Right.
Can you see the back of your own head? Can you see so many parts of your body, the back? When those eyes are not able to give you that, how can they see the subtle mind?
Right.
So he says, you have to go beyond the Charma Chakshu, and you have to go to Jnana Netram, or the Divya Netram, or Atma Netram, or Brahma Netram. He says these are all synonyms, but it all means the vision of wisdom and the vision of unity. Then he goes on to this thing, saying that, in this entire creation of where there is this constant change, the changing phenomena, we find this divine principle of Brahman as a stationary road that supports the movement of all the fast running buses and cars. So he says, when there is traffic on a on a road, the road is one that sustains the entire traffic, but it remains.
Very true. Suppose you're in the middle of a road.
Mm.
I think this even happened during one of the Gram Sevas.
Mm-hmm.
We have these mobile communications.
Mm-hmm.
There's one particular boy who called up the home base and he said, sir, we need more stocks. We are in the middle of distribution and we are out of stock. We need more stock.
Mm-hmm.
So, the home base asked him, where are you? And this boy mentions the name of the village.
Mm.
And the home base says, it's a large village. Where in the village are you?
Mm.
So that we can get to you.
Mm.
And this boy, in the tension of conveying the message, he said, sir, I'm behind this vehicle whose number is so-and-so. The problem is, it's exactly what Swami is telling here.
Mm.
See, if you give a description of a place based on what is changing about the place, how can you identify that place?
Correct.
Swami is saying, you can identify a road, the basis of the thing. If you want to identify a certain location, you can't say it is that place where there is a black car parked behind a red bus.
It's going to change.
Right. If you want to identify something about a particular place, about a particular person, you have to see what is the more permanent aspect of that individual, of that entity.
Correct. And he says the characteristic of the mind is external orientation. And he says, but we are so fascinated by it, and man is busy acquiring properties, which he would often say is proper ties. And these are the ties that bind you. But then comes this beautiful declaration, which you mentioned even in the last session.
Right.
He says, to realize God is the foremost task in life. Man must realize God, feel God, see God, and talk to God. This is realization. This is religion. It serves no purpose if one knows everything else but does not know God. So, it's again coming back to this whole yad drishyam tad nashyam. So whatever you see is bound to change. And in the Gita also, there is this beautiful analogy of a string that connects all the pearls. He says, you are the string that connects all the pearls in a necklace.
Right.
The string is one that holds the pearls together, but it's often not seen.
Right. The idea which is very, very repetitive, even from the very first discourse, is that to the ability to see the human birth as a means.
Correct.
You know, the whole problem is when you see human birth as the ends, when you see enjoying it or earning for it as the most important thing, you miss the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you start seeing this as a means, the moment you start seeing the human body as an instrument to achieve something grander,
correct,
I think everything falls into place.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole idea, because Swami here is saying about you should have that burning desire to see God, talk to God, to realize God, and you should understand that this whole human birth has been given for that very purpose.
Correct. Then he gives how God is the seed, like how he is the unseen power, and he refers to the flowers and the trees and the fruit. He says God is the seed that is, you know, that gives birth to this huge tree.
Right.
And when the flowers bloom and they become fruits, each fruit in itself has got many seeds. So this is the cycle that goes on. But God, Bijam Mam Sarva Bhutanam, as God, as Krishna has declared in the Gita. So he says God is that seed.
And then the next part, Swami comes to talk about sacrifice.
Yeah.
He's saying that, he quotes that Vedic
Shlokavali.
And Swami says, what is that sacrifice? What do you have to give up? And he says, you have to give up the wrong identification of the body.
Correct.
And that beautiful sequence which Swami says, you know,
yes,
so beautifully, he says, Deha Virakti,
yes,
which is
detachment
to the body, will give Bandha Vimochana, which is release from bondage, which will give Daiva Asakti,
correct,
which is the grace of Lord,
and
that will lead to Moksha Prapti. And then he says, how do you develop this Deha Virakti? It is the continuous assertion and reminding that the body and the senses are mere instruments. And you are not them.
Correct.
That is, in that point, I mean, in a sense, you know, that I think Swami is, I don't know if in this series Swami mentioned that those three things, you know, bhajan, nitya, nityatam. Constantly reminding yourself that what is real, what is unreal. Even if you don't know it by experience, constantly telling yourself and to do every act on the basis of that understanding, on that lesson.
So he says you must give up your body consciousness just as you remove your soiled clothes. It's there in the Gita as well. It says, Jirnani vastrani yatha vihaya. You remove the old clothes and put on new clothes. So also the soul removes this body. And very nice to hear all that.
That's
really
precisely
difficult to keep it in mind all
that's
the
precisely
time.
Precisely why Swami calls it practice. Practice,
that's right.
One is putting into action, the other is repetitively trying to do something and to learn from it.
Correct. And so as Swami would always say, the easiest way is to offer it all to God.
Right.
So once you're offering it to Him, then you want to do it in the perfect way. So he again refers to this concept of freedom. And he says, you think you have freedom, but you cannot get freedom because everything that you have is connected to the mind and it is temporary. So when everything is temporary, there is no freedom. You are bound by what it gives you. When you depend on it, you are bound by that. And again he comes to this whole idea of kartrutva and bhoktrutva. He says that is doership and enjoyership. He says you are yourself the embodiment of bliss. That is your true nature. But you give importance to the actions that your body is doing and you think you are doing it. You give importance to what you think you own. You say, this is mine. And then you get this ahankara. And then you say, I want to do this. I own this. So he says, all this is what binds you. And again he brings in raga and dvesha, attachment and hatred. So he says, all these are only going to finally bind you.
And then Swami goes on to give this wonderful example of that payasam which is poured, or sweet pudding which is poured into a vessel with many holes.
Correct, correct.
He says that the payasam is the same thing. It comes through different holes, but the payasam which comes out is the same which is poured into the vessel. And Swami says that is what happens with Atmanandam.
Correct.
He said in many activities which you do through your everyday life, this bliss which is already within you comes out. And you think that you relate that bliss with the activity which is being done.
Correct.
Like you're saying that this hole is what will give you that, you know, prasadam or that sweetness.
That's what he says. You forget your true nature, just like the elephant forgets its own strength when it's being prodded by the mahout with a small stick.
Right.
And he says the bumblebee which can bore holes into wood. Gets stuck in the nectar of a lotus flower and it dies.
Right. When the lotus closes at sunset, it remains there and dies.
This is because it's under delusion. It forgets its own strength. Then similarly he says even the musk deer, not realizing that its fragrance is coming from itself. It goes around running all over.
The statement which Swami makes is, man does not know his own strength and does not accept even when told.
Correct.
And then Swami makes this, again, wonderful point, you know, where he says that, like how when you put money in banks that have lots of money have to be guarded with the men holding weapons. Similarly, this bliss is the real wealth which is within you, and it is guarded by a poisonous serpent which is nothing but your own ahankara or ego.
Identification with body.
Right.
So, then the root cause of ahankara is deha bhramti, as we were just saying.
Right.
Because you identify yourself with the body, then you start getting, I am doing this, I am doing that. Then here is this most beautiful and practical, you know, yes, we are talking of all these problems, but how to solve it? How to live a life and how to actually practice all this? So Swami gives even that solution. He says, whenever, before entering into action, ask yourself thus, I am the embodiment of the divine Atma. Is it proper for me to engage myself in this mean, despicable action? I think this kind of summarizes, this is the key point in this entire discourse. So what do I do? I mean, what do I do? You know, it's very interesting because I'm just remembering some of the things which Swami would speak to us, you know, as he would stand on the veranda. So he would say, thoughts will come. There's nothing wrong. Swami, I'm getting bad thoughts. You know, when we were in school days, we didn't know what was good or bad. So it is, Swami, I'm getting bad thoughts. Swami, please. Swami said, let them come and go. I didn't realize because, see, you cannot say bad thoughts should not come. But he says, don't identify with them.
Right.
So he would always say, let them come and go, let them come and go. But you don't put them into action. So what you choose to put into action sticks on to you. So he says, this is the way to go about. And in a very beautiful way, he connects it up to patriotism.
Right, you know, that is the thing. Swami saying, the idea is when you give up attachment and hatred, raga and dvesha, he says the only way is expand yourself instead of grabbing things for your own self, for your own family.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the larger picture. Think of the society you're living in. Think of the village you're living in. Think of the country you're living in.
Mm-hmm.
So patriotism becomes a very sublime way of using up this attachment. You know, when you associate yourself with something which is much larger.
When you broaden your...
Right, and you give more importance to that than your
personal
physical self.
In fact, and Swami mentions this beautiful story of Subhash Chandra Bose, how he could not tolerate when the teacher was, belittling Indians and his country. And he says students should be like that. Students should follow his example and sacrifice their swartha for parartha, the welfare of others, and attain Paramatma, the supreme goal of life.
Then Swami says this, you know, talking about patriotism, Swami says, this deshabhimanam, which is patriotism, will lead you to daivabhimanam, and eventually it will express itself as dharmabhimanam.
Correct.
So beautifully Swami says, the attachment to righteousness, it will reflect as attachment to righteousness.
Then he says, bliss is the goal for which you undertake any activity, mundane or spiritual. Bliss is the goal of all religions. The paths may be many, but the goal is one. Just as jewels are many and gold is one. Cows are many, but milk is one. So, again, he says, all that you seek for is bliss, and you are under the impression that whatever your body does or whatever your mind conjures up, that is going to give you the everlasting bliss. And you give importance to it and associate yourself with it, and you get lost. So I think that's what he says. Along with your education, try to develop equal mindedness and universal love so that you can experience the unity in diversity. See, this point of unity in diversity is so vital, and he says, cows are many, milk is one, jewels are many, but gold is one. Ultimately, when we summarized the previous discourse, he was speaking about Hridayam, and he says the only way of knowing what Hridayam is to experience the unity in the entire creation. So I think that's one of the practical ways of actually starting, looking at practicing this entire concept of seeing God in everybody. And if you truly believe and speak to the God in the person opposite you, I'm sure the God in that person will respond. Isn't that right?
And I think does require a lot of practice, and
that's true, but
in a sense fearlessness also, I think.
But there are many incidents. I think there was a famous incident of a hijacker coming into the plane, and I don't remember the exact details, but the devotee was constantly thinking, Swami, it is you who was inside him, let him not do any harm to me. And there was an incident, I just don't remember the details.
Right.
But when you, I think, do it sincerely, it does have an impact. So, talking of that, we go on to the next discourse, that's ascent of man.
Right.
And so he says, if you have really practiced, then you will have an ascent.
Right. This is a very beautiful discourse in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, till the 14th discourse, Swami has spoken so much about spirituality, good living, using your body and the senses and the other instruments in the right manner. Now, if individuals live like this, what will be the impact of it on the society? And how can you see the society and see if the individuals are living their lives in the manner which is right? That's what Swami says, because this entire discourse, Swami's focus is on morality in
society.
Morality,
really.
Very beautiful.
And it's like, as you said, the collective effect of each individual doing what he's supposed to do.
Right.
So he says, he starts off with, the true ornament for mankind is manavatvam, that is humaneness itself.
Right.
He says, everything beautiful in the creation, everything, like the waves are the ornaments of the ocean, the moon is an ornament to the sky. Wherever there is beauty, that is God. So he says, unchanging beauty, that is God, satyam shivam sundaram. But the ornament for man himself is manavatvam. He says that is humaneness. And he says, human values can progress and thrive only in a spiritual environment. See, here, it's like, tell me your company, I shall tell you what you are. So he says, if you are having this innate humaneness, you should be with like-minded people. And that nurtures and that grows.
It's a very important point where Swami is saying that spiritual environment is very good.
Correct.
You know, many times this talk is there with, is it enough to be just a good person? You know, that inspiration to be good at all times, whatever be the cost, that comes only when you have that larger picture in your mind, when you have a spiritual bent of mind, when you realize that, you know, it's okay if I lose a bit in this life, because my aim is to get something which is beyond and much larger than this life itself.
Correct.
Unless that spiritual bend of mind is there, I don't think that goodness at all times, what Swami says, morality in society and that manavatvam, sticking to that at all times is possible. You know, Swami says the human values can progress and thrive only
in the human heart.
A spiritual environment in the human heart.
And then he says, morality and integrity can thrive only in the human heart. Morality is the fulfillment of character and conduct. So then he gives these examples of Marshall Pope and William Gladstone.
Right.
He says how they stuck to values even in challenging times.
Right.
And next point is very beautiful. He says morality is achieved through the control of senses.
Right.
I mean, it's just like a circle coming back to the same thing. And but that's what it is.
It's in a sense very beautiful, because again, the same point which you said, you know, about bad thoughts. Swami saying that don't associate yourself with those thoughts. Don't convert them into action.
Actions, that's right.
That's exactly what Swami is saying, a control of senses. Mm. Swami is not saying that run away from those things which are bad or you will never look at them. It is just that your ability to control yourself even when bad thoughts come, even when you look at something which is tempting.
Mm.
And Swami goes on to say that, you know, one who cannot control himself cannot control anybody else.
Correct. And then unity of thought, word and deed, he says, harmony of thought, word and deed is possible only when it is rhythm.
Right.
So satyam is...
only actions and words.
Yeah, words and actions. This is a very subtle point. Because thought, word and deed, he says that is rhythm. And the ultimate truth is the true nature of who you are, what you are. And if that is united with your word and action, and you are constantly living in the present, in the now, then I think that you are representing rhythm, not satyam. You are beyond satyam.
Then Swami goes on to talk about
sense control and dhammam. And he says samayam, samyama and dhammam. He says this is self-control. And he says the person who has achieved this kind of self-control is a danta.
Right, Dantulu.
Dantulu. Dantulu. But he says today we have only Vedantulu, and who are able to speak about the Vedas and, you know, have an oratory, ostentatious presentation of the Vedas.
Right.
But, that's so true because, you know, even us both for that matter, we are talking all the high-flown concepts, but how true we are. In following what Swami is actually saying. I think the more we try to follow it, we don't have to speak.
I think ours is more the case of what happened with the great poet Kalidasa.
Okay.
When he's initially a simpleton and a person who is of very low intellect, and he's got married to a princess who's supposed to be very intelligent. She realizes that he's a dudhead and throws him out of the palace.
Mm.
That's when he goes to the river to kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
He says his life is not worth living.
Mm-hmm.
And there he sees some ladies washing clothes.
Okay.
And there, among the many rocks which are there on the banks, on the rocks on which these ladies are washing clothes, those rocks have become smooth.
Okay.
So he says, you know, these rocks being hit repeatedly by soft cloth can become rough, can become smooth.
Smooth.
Then why can't that happen with my mind? If I constantly hit it with knowledge, won't my mind also, the rock-like mind, won't it become smooth?
Wow.
And I think that is our state, hoping that going on listening to Swami's words and going over this over and over again, some of it at least will percolate inside. With
that's
humble
true.
Prayers to Swami, that's what I think we can say is our endeavor here.
So then he gives this beautiful point about discipline and obedience. Like how is an educated person, how does he live his life? He says you never speak in front of your elders. You have to have that humility. And he says, but today's world people have, they ridicule spirituality. They say, oh, this is not for us. But he says, only when you have this humility, that is the hallmark of an educated person.
Right. The next point which Swami says, now Swami was, in a sense, addressing students when he was talking about humility. And then he goes on to say the problem is the parents and teachers are neither setting a proper example nor encouraging them in such matters.
Mm.
Where, I think Swami has mentioned this many, many times before, where not having the right kind of leadership from teachers is, is the cause for the youth being misdirected.
Mm.
And then there is a part where Swami talks about giving up frivolous talk. He's saying so much time is wasted.
Correct.
Youth today are fond of frivolous talk.
Mm.
This has become the hobby for them. They're allergic to good and gentle words.
Mm-hmm. Then he goes on to the spirit of sacrifice. So he says, you have to give up. You have to give up if you want to get. And he gives this beautiful example of swimming. He says when you want to move forward, you have to push the water backwards. Unless you push the water backwards, and he would often give the example of even blood. He says if the blood says, oh no, I like this place, let me sit in this place, you're going to end up with a blood clot. And he says the blood has to move. So similarly, blood, money, he says the money has to move. And here he's giving the example of water. So when you want to move forward, you have to push. So he also says, give up your bad qualities and then get good qualities, and that is true sacrifice and renunciation. He says giving up your family, property and all that is easy, but giving up your bad qualities is what is more challenging.
So he also gives the example of breathing here.
Mm-hmm.
He says when you breathe in air, you cannot get attached to the air that you breathed in and say that I will not exhale. And Swami says the importance of flowing, you know, Swami has mentioned this many times, the water that is stagnant is starts developing a foul odor. But the water that's flowing is that which is fresh and which can sustain life. Swami says it's not wrong to earn, but it has to be shared with others.
Others, no? That's right.
Right.
And then he says the, 16 kalas that man has is 16 qualities that he should give up. So that's very beautifully, he says, that is the 6 internal enemies, that is Arishad Vargas, the 8 kinds of Mada, that is pride, the 2 qualities of Rajas, that is restlessness, and Tamas.
Right.
He should also give up Kartatva and Bhoktatva, that is doership and enjoyership. So he says, if you give up these 16 habits, then you are a human. I mean, such a definition, to be a human, this is what you should be. And very beautifully he gives this the inner meaning of what Potana had written after that.
Before that, you know, even as you were narrating that you have to give up this, give up that, a huge list. When one is just overwhelmed by this and wondering, you know, how can this ever be? Swami gives it, you know, in one sentence, very beautifully he just puts it, the solution is engage in good deeds and dedicate them to God.
Correct.
To think that, you know, that simple task can actually give you all this.
Correct.
Very beautiful.
And he just
and
says,
then, of course, the Potana's thing comes. Swami says the Tattvam Asi.
Correct.
Initially he says that Tat is God, Tvam is the devotee, and Asi is the Bhagavata or the composition or the poem.
Correct. And then he goes on to expand this Bhagavatamu.
Right. Very beautiful.
Bha is for Bhakti, Ga is for Jnanam, and
Bha is for Vairagya.
Vairagya.
Ta is for Tattvam, and Mu is for Mukti.
Mukti.
And he says these are the progressive steps of man's liberation.
Correct.
He says you start with bhakti, the bhakti gets infused with wisdom. That should lead you to vairagya.
Correct.
And that will give you the ability to see the tattvam, see that which is the essence, which will eventually lead you to mukti.
How beautiful, no? How beautiful. Class 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And Swami says it starts with Bhagavatam. It starts with reveling in the stories and the joy of knowing of God.
Correct. And then he gives this example of how the student life or celibate life is a foundation of this mansion of life. And he says it's very important that the foundation is secure and strong. And then he gives this often quoted example of how the Pandavas kept God first, the world next, and themselves last. But the Kauravas kept themselves first, the world next, and God last. So they were lost. So they lost.
Then Swami, again, towards the end, I think he says that the 3 things you should never forget, Satya, Dharma, and Nyaya, justice.
Correct.
So he says, seeing the difference between our ancestors and the current day is the fall in practice of these.
Correct. And he says this ahankara, in fact, I think in one of the earlier discourses, Swami says ahankara is subtler than even the
buddhi,
intellect.
Right.
Subtler than buddhi. So if you look at the planets that are revolving around the Atma, if Atma is the sun, you have Atma in the center, next is ahankara, then is buddhi, then is manas, then the senses, then the body.
Right.
So that's the...
Exactly, because that's what Swami says, that it is the guardian which is stopping you from accessing that Atmanandam.
Very
that's
true.
The serpent which is...
And I just can't help but recollect how Swami would, really warn, especially the bhajan singers, ahamkaram, ahamkaram, ahamkaram. Now looking at it, on a deeper note, he's really saying your body is gifted with this ability to sing well. Why are you thinking you're singing? Your body is singing. It's been gifted with that. So don't get pride. Don't feel that, oh, I am doing something great. So he would always tone them down. And he would give that much importance to the bhajan singers as well. But he would always, in fact, it's quite difficult when Swami gets very stern with you. He says, come down, too much ego, too much ego, too much ego. And that's one thing, you know, with bhajan singers, I would always notice Swami would bring them down.
As someone was saying, the ways Swami molds and shapes us, It's like, in the olden days, they used to use these copper pots.
Uh-huh.
And invariably, copper is not a very stern metal in the sense they would always, they used to lose their shape with use.
Mm-hmm.
So you take it to probably an expert in dealing with these copper pots, And he will get it back into the shape.
Okay.
So they'll say that some strokes will be from outside the pot, some strokes will be from inside the pot. And he said, that's how Swami deals with all of us. You know, sometimes you need to be pumped up, Sometimes you need to be put down.
Yeah.
Both are essential.
In fact, he would say, give this comparison of the car, and he would say the front tire and the back tire.
Right.
So if the air is less, you have to pump in. If the air is more, you have to remove the air, puncture it a little bit.
Right.
And Swami is the master puncturer, as he would puncture many of the egos.
Right.
And we have seen it again and again. And the beautiful part is, any activity you do with a sense of, I am doing it, oh, I am so accomplished, I am such an artist, I am such a musician, be sure you're going to get it on the head. And rightly, you know, some of them would say, if Swami calls you Bangaru, be ready, you're going to go in for a session with the fire. But if he calls you Dunnapota, that is a buffalo, he buffalo, be very happy that nothing is going to, he's very happy with you.
I think both are the challenge, you know, even when Swami was trying to very sternly correct, And at the same time when Swami was praising. Because when Swami was praising, you had to keep reminding yourself, because you know what is coming after that, when Swami is praising. So you have to keep reminding yourself that you're not the one. I think that is why you always have these stories. You know, I think in the next discourse, we're coming to that, there Swami makes that point. The Vedas, the Vedantas, these are all very, very profound.
Correct.
But to make the lessons which these scriptures have accessible to even common man, You have Puranas and Itihasas.
Very
and
true.
That is why we have stories. You know, even if you take recent saints, You have that episode of Gyaneshwar, Who makes a buffalo chant the Vedas.
Correct.
You know, I think every time we revel in our success and say that, oh, I can speak so well, or I can chant Vedas so well, I can sing.
Correct.
I think some image like that has to come in our mind, that if he wishes, he could make anybody and anything.
That's right.
Chant.
That's absolutely right. I mean, he could just catch a buffalo and make him chant the Vedas.
Right.
What more? I mean, anybody can do anything. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langete girim. So, it's really, a caution light on in all of us. This discourse is very unique in the way it comes towards the end of the series. It comes back to Vedic wisdom.
Right.
And as we pointed out when we even went through this discourse, he comes back to Satya and Dharma. That's how he started this entire series. And he actually comes back to that. In the beginning of the discourse, he says the most important thing is, he draws attention to the all-comprehensiveness of the Vedas. He says, the Vedas have got everything, but the crest jewel of what the Vedas have is Atma-jnana. He says, it has got all types of things. It has got all forms of knowledge. But Atma-jnana is what is the crest jewel of what the Veda contains for us. And he gives the different aspects of God. Shabda Brahma Mai, Charachara Mai, Jyotir Mai, Nityananda Mai. And how he says, all this is contained, the information or the knowledge about all this is contained in the Vedas. And he goes on to the technicalities of how there are three kandas. That is the Karma Kanda, Upasana Kanda and Jnana Kanda.
Right. Because, you know, that is the essence of the Vedas, when you often say the Samhita, the Brahmanas and the Aranyakas, where, you know, that part of Vedas which we constantly use is only the Karmakanda, where you do rituals and you say that these are the things which have to be done properly, and you do this to obtain this. So Swami says from that there is the Upasana Kanda, and I think later in that same discourse, Swami explains what is each one of this, what is karma, what is Upasana.
Yes.
You know, where he says that karma, which is
the essence of karma, is to dedicate all actions to God or to perform all activities as offerings to the Lord for His pleasure.
Right.
Upasana Yoga consists of loving God wholeheartedly and with Trikarana Shuddhi, that is harmony of and purity of thought, word and deed. It is not true Upasana if one loves God for the sake of achieving worldly desires. It should be love for love's sake.
Right.
That is Bhakti Marga, very purely.
Then he says about Jnana Yoga, he says, consider the whole universe as the manifestation of God. Believing that divinity resides in all beings in the form of Atma is called Jnana.
That's right. And so these are the three different aspects. The karma, bhakti and jnana, as divided in the Vedas. You have the upasana, you have the karma kanda, upasana kanda and the jnana kanda.
Right.
Then he gives this example of how this 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita are also divided based on this. The first the first six are karma based on action, second six on bhakti, and the last six on jnana.
And then Swami explains again the beautiful example of the waves in the ocean.
He says
how students may wonder how everything which is so different in appearance be one and the same. And Swami says, look at the waves. Again, the importance of the temporary nature of existence.
Correct.
You know, that which is temporary, and I think in the earlier discourse Swami says, that which does not have a beginning, that which does not, I mean, that which has a beginning, which has an end, does not have a middle too. That is temporary.
So
Swami is saying that, yes, you see different waves, waves have different shapes, different heights, but the very fact that they rise and they merge back into the ocean, you do not attribute as individual existence to each wave. You say that they are part of the ocean, they are ocean. And Swami says that's exactly with every Jivatma, which is nothing but a part of the whole.
Right, I can't, you know, just can't forget that beautiful sight of Swami standing on the veranda, especially when you're talking of Bhagavad Gita. He would ask us to chant, and two chapters Swami would, we were taught as in the school. That is chapter 2, a few shlokas from chapter 2, and the 12th chapter. 12th chapter is Bhakti Yoga. And it's so beautiful. There you have the definition of who a true bhakta is, who a devotee is. And as Swami rightly said, you concentrate on me, offer all your actions to me. Mayeva naadastho may buddhi niveshaya niveshishyati mayeva. Do it for my sake. So he says, do it all for my sake and I will give you what you require. And it's real spoon feeding, because for those of us who have been with Bhagawan, absolute spoon feeding. But the whole challenge is you have to grow out of that. And now is the time he's really put the first question paper has leaked out. He says, now you answer this question paper and try to see me inside yourself.
Right.
So we have been spoon-fed to see him outside us. Now I think it's time to go within.
You talk of this example of Swami giving waves. Reminded, it seems the, I think every sports meet will have at least one wave formation, you know, in the primary school or the school, higher secondary school.
Correct.
It seems for the first time when they had it as an event, as part of an event, they had a wave formation. I think the primary school children did it.
Okay.
And Swami had come for the practice.
Okay.
So they were all in the ground and they'd made a huge wave formation. Swami was so thrilled to see it. Swami was standing there at the edge of the stage, I think.
Okay.
And looked at it and Swami was saying, ah, waves, 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 Swami was saying, as they were doing it. And in that same excitement, Swami said, waves, waves, waves. One day they will all come and merge in the ocean.
Ah, beautiful.
One day they will all merge in the ocean. You know, even with children, Swami was always re-emphasizing that essential knowledge which you all had come to learn. Even in the previous discourse, Swami said, acquiring knowledge is not wrong, acquiring skill is not wrong. But remember for what you're doing it. You know, the higher learning is what you all have come here for.
Correct. And then he gives this beautiful example of, he gives the basically the genesis of the entire, Yajurveda. Right. How Yajna, Vaisampayana goes to Yajnavalka, and the entire story of how, you know, the guru, he doesn't respect the guru, and then the guru takes the knowledge back from him. The entire chronology of how Krishna Yajurveda and Shukla Yajurveda.
And so many subtle lessons in that one episode.
That's the point.
Right, you know, you could be somebody as intelligent as Yajnavalkya who is able to master the Vedas, but that little bit of chink in the armor where you have, ego comes in and everything breaks down. And then there is an example of self-confidence.
Correct.
Where even after losing everything, if you have self-confidence, you can go in, earn it again. And this time he did not receive it from any human teacher, but he received the knowledge from
directly from
the sun god. Sun god.
From Surya.
Right.
And as you rightly said, yes, there are many of these stories and the Puranas are full of them, but only Swami can give us the inner significance. And, kind of related to what we are going through here, very clearly when Swami says the end of education is character. So he says, what happens if you, is humility as well. And he says, what happens if you are not humble? Even a great person like Vaisampayana had to go through that.
Right. And then even again in this, through the story, Swami says, how did Yajnavalkya attain the state of the ability to become a student of Sun God? He says it is because of Annadhana.
Yeah, that's the point, correct.
Because he and his ancestors had done a lot of charity of food. And Swami says there is no gift higher than the gift of food, and no God higher than parents. There is no truth higher than japa and tapas.
Correct.
There is no dharma higher than compassion, and no gain higher than the company of the good. There is no enemy more dangerous than anger, and no disease more serious than indebtedness. There is no death more horrible than ill fame, and no wealth more valuable than fame.
Satkirti.
Of course, one more thing is that there is no ornament more beautiful than smaran, or the repetition of God's name. And he says these were the things which actually endowed Yajnavalkya with that knowledge of Vedas. And Swami says how that becomes the other part of the Vedas.
You know, with Gram Seva coming up very soon, he just kind of institutionalized it.
Right.
And, that whole scene of how Swami would bend so lovingly and serve prasadam to all the people. And it's so amazing because we would carry all these things to the ground earlier.
Right.
Then Swami said, why should the people come here? We should go house to house. It's always one step higher.
Right. You know, one would think in those days when the roadways were so bad, people used to come here. And once the roadways became better, you would think that more people might come. But Swami said, roads are good now. Let's take tempos and go to them.
Let's go there.
That is the way Swami thinks is completely different from how we would otherwise think, I think. Then Swami talks about, the five things or five sins one must avoid.
Correct.
He says, again, the story of Yajnavalkya, he says, indifference to what the guru, parents and other elders teach you, disobedience to your parents and elders, ego, jealousy or envy towards those who are better off, and violating social etiquette or decorum.
Especially the last one, Swami was so particular, so particular about social etiquette, and he would
Sangha Niti.
The very fact that even till the end, Swami was always standing up and giving his discourse. Isn't that so amazing? That Sabha Maryada, Swami would say, the respect for the society and social etiquette was so perfect. And, when guests would come, the way Swami would receive them, the way he would give them what is due to each one. It's amazing. In fact, Professor Venkatraman would often relate it to, Rama coming in for the coronation. So there is this beautiful thing. As Lord Rama is walking in, he looks at the praja and he gives his abhyasta blessings. And he looks at his preceptor and he just does pranams. And then he looks at his family members and others there and he gives a smile. So what is, meant for each one? So he would do that according to So as he was coming for coronation, and it, you know, it's so similar to what we would see when Swami is coming for darshan. Somebody is in pain, what he needs, he would immediately go and speak to them. And then students, what do you want? Take chocolates and throw. Or, you know, it's just he would give what you want at that point of time.
Very true.
And
even, you know, one would think that why should Swami give special importance to, you know, heads of state? But mm-hmm. Swami would say that, you know, it is an office which you're giving respect to.
Correct.
You have to give, you know, Swami would often say seating has to be according to the people and their stature.
Mm.
That has to be there.
Correct.
And Swami would often insist on such things. And then, of course, Swami, you know, talks as a conclusion to this entire thing. Swami mm-hmm. saying that, you know, 15 days you had the essence of the Vedanta.
Mm.
Swami says that I've given you the essence of Vedanta in this.
Correct.
You know, this is got by churning the Shastras, Puranas and Itihasas. And I think definitely that's what this entire series is, 1990 Samukul series is phenomenal. And to think that the entire Shastras and Puranas were put into 15 days.
Correct.
15 discourses, 16 discourses is really overwhelming.
So here then he gives this beautiful example of karma, bhakti and jnana of the wall clock. You know, he says,
beautiful
that's
analogy.
A beautiful analogy. He says, you do 100 good deeds, for example, okay, 60 good deeds, then you have earned 1 minute of bhakti.
Bhakti.
So if you do 60 good bhakti, then you get 1 hour of
jnana.
You know, of jnana. Basically, it's the seconds, minutes and the hour hand. He says, he compares it to the karma, bhakti and marga,
right.
Jnana.
I think I'm reminded of what Arvind was once sharing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the 9 code conduct which Swami has given,
yeah.
Even if you look at that, that also is accordingly, proportionally put.
Okay.
You know, he says that there are fewer number of points which directly correlate to jnana.
Okay.
Little more which correlate to bhakti. And there are many more which correlate to karma.
Okay.
So Swami says that do more karma which will lead you to bhakti. And that bhakti will again is what will edge you towards jnana.
And then he concludes his discourse with a very, very beautiful point. He says, God does not see how rich you are or how accomplished, how knowledgeable you are. He says, Valmiki, who was he? He was just a hunter. Then he says, Nanda was an untouchable. Kuchela was a pauper. Dhruva and Prahalada were mere lads of 5 years. Sabari was a tribal woman, illiterate and uncivilized. But all of them won God's heart. And they won His grace in abundance. I think he's just coming back to the point that what really matters is your feeling.
Right.
And to offer it to God who is always in you. Really, how foolish we are when we think that, you know, maybe Swami does not know this. He says, I am always in you. And how can you escape? He is just watching every thought of yours.
And Swami goes on to say about upasana and whatever worship, whatever you do as worship, that should eventually lead to chitta shuddhi.
Right.
And in a sense, Swami is saying that, you know, this is what is a measure of whether you are progressing on the right direction. It should lead to chitta shuddhi, and even that chitta shuddhi should lead to atma vishwasam. Swami is saying, unless your good actions, worship and love of God lead to atma vishwasa or self-confidence, the former two will be futile.
Very true.
Imagine you might do any number of... I think that is why even in Sanskrit there is that saying which says, ati vinayam durita lakshanam.
Okay.
You know, when humility becomes a curbing factor.
Okay.
Humility is something which should lead to atma vishwasa. Swami says that it should lead to self-confidence, the confidence in that higher self.
True. I think that's what we could get out of this last discourse. But for those who have not heard the original, there's nothing like really hearing the original.
Right.
And I'm sure there's much more. And we can go on even with each of these discourses. Here is a time when we have really completed this entire series. And I don't know how much we are really capable of remembering and putting into practice. But I would say it's a first step.
Definitely. So dear listeners, that brings us to the end of not just this segment of Thursday Live today, but this entire series which we've been doing, I think, for the past 1.5 years.
Right.
I think we've done at least 80 episodes.
Oh, is it?
I believe around 80 episodes. And okay. On 16 discourses.
We on repeat, 16 discourses right, of Bhagavan.
We're repeating
that's
it
amazing.
Over and over again. Because that's how much Swami's discourses contain.
Correct.
And the very idea that you could just, at the click of a button, listen to Swami's voice at
correct.
Any time of the day, in any part of the globe,
mm-hmm.
is itself something which should be so overwhelming and it should trigger us. So dear listeners, if you're hearing us, please do listen to more of Swami. Listen to Swami's discourses, because that is the greatest gift which Swami has left for all of us. And it would be such a waste if we have loved Swami, if we have known Swami, and if we don't listen to Swami's words. And as Swami said, practice it. Because Swami said, every scripture,
correct.
Be it of any religion, any part of the world, it was given for practice, not
right.
for hearing and listening and talking about.
That's right.
So hopefully all of us, including both of us, Sai Prakash and myself here, we would begin that practice in our everyday life. Hopefully we've already begun that. And we offered it to Swami, and Swami said, do what is good and offer it to me. So this program, all our efforts, and this entire series which we've done so far, we most humbly offer it at Swami's lotus feet, and we thank Him from the bottom of our hearts for giving us this opportunity. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us all through, and for all the encouragement that you've given us. So with this, we conclude the segment. In a very short while, we'll be joined by Brother Bishu. This last segment of the day, outside, inside, deep inside. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.